Arianism and Romanity. In the wake of Sparta and the sacred furrow plowed by Romulus, we must shed our blood. Nello Gatta. Hic niger est hunc tu Romain cavito. This is black, thou, citizen of Rome, beware of this. On April 21, 753 BC, under the star of Venus, occurred the foundation of Rome. This was no simple human event, but a sacred deed desired by the gods. And the beginning of the fulfillment of a destiny, the destiny of the Roman race. At that time, after the end of the cycle of Hyperborean Atlantis, the Aryan folk had migrated in many directions and various uprisings in the Mediterranean lands had seen the ruin of Sparta and the Dorians, while Aryans had come to rule Egypt from those mysterious islands of the west. Then the Mediterranean entered into full spiritual decadence, no longer a society of virile warlike solar cults but dominated instead by dark decadent peoples like the Etruscans, Phoenicians, and other matriarchal societies. Precisely here in this moment of greatest crisis there appeared a ray of Hyperborean light in the Nordic blood of Romulus. A small group of warrior farmer shepherds, with their poor and women, settled in Latium, the Hesperia of Saturnia Tellus, an ancient name of Italy that was in fact derived from the morning star, Lucifer. They were surrounded by pompous, arrogant people rich in material wealth but poor in divine power. The gens Romulia were seen by those other peoples of the region as barbarians, dangerous barbarians. Yet they triumphed as the bearers of a divine destiny, and their actions were all marked by the same sacredness, a law that comes from above, from a divine origin, and that blows away anything that opposes it. Before long the Etruscans, the eastern nations, all of them devoted to degenerate materialistic lunar dirt, were each in turn defeated by Roman sunlight. Rome expelled Tarquin the Proud and then established the fundamental victory of Romanity, the blessing of Roman soil, by the furrow first traced by Romulus. And this destiny, this archetype, the victory of its Aryan parent over the earthquake and the south, is at the very basis of the birth of Rome. Remus violates the sacred border, mocking Romulus, mocking his divine inspiration, and is relentlessly punished. This principle becomes part of the unconscious of every true Roman, by which he always remembers that no one, not even his own brother, is granted exemption to violate the name of Rome, and we see in all the enemies of Rome a repetition of the role played by Remus, which is still and always the victory of light over darkness, the focal point which determined the nature of the Nordic race. In Rome, a type common to all Indo-European peoples, the foundation of Rome is itself a racial struggle against the dark elements, at first mainly represented by the Etruscans, then by the Phoenicians, the Carthaginians, Carthago delenda est, and finally by the Christian Judaizers. Rome was founded by combating anti-Europeans, and this fighting breeds proto-orientalized Indo-Europeans, and then Rome falls, as a material empire, defeated by these same forces, suffocated by the Syrian populace that infected the air of Rome with a stench of their dead which rose from their dark underground catacombs where the Judaic Chaldeans gathered together to dispel the light of the sun. Rome is therefore the strongest incarnation of the eternal principle of the universe. The struggle between the gods and demons, and then between the respective sons of these incarnate on this earth, the archetype of which is the winter solstice. Victory of the sun over darkness. A solar cult, heroic and manly, as opposed to matriarchal cults, lunar, orgiastic. Aryan Nordic brightness which proves the genius of Rome and the Roman vir, in contrast to everything from the outer darkness. Rome is the true center of differentiation between the Aryan and non-Aryan races of the Mediterranean, and thus the basis for the future struggles of Rome and for the hatred the peoples of the Mediterranean basin would have for her. Everyone wanted to destroy her, jealous of her brightness, all feeling their fates becoming ever more decadent and sweltering, feeling their agony become increasingly strong, and knowing they could do nothing to save themselves. This hatred became so popular that at one time all the historical enemies allied themselves together to advance up to the very walls of Rome, but the Capitoline triad was far stronger than any women birds of prey who, knowing the inevitable resurgence of the Roman race, were expelled from what had once been their greatest and most flourishing city, whose lands were then plowed with salt. Such was the end of the enemies of Rome. European enemies, enemies of the Arians. Such was the end of Carthage, the anti-European excellence of the ancient world. Once again the winter solstice sun could celebrate the victory of Rome. And in their campaign in Gaul, for the extermination of the Druids by the labors of Caesar, there was no victory of the south over the north, but rather totally the opposite. The Druids of that time were no longer the chaste Goths of their origins, but Golem infiltrators, see the Chronicle of Eurolinda by Herman Worth, the last representatives of the lunar forces, based on human sacrifice, so much so that we witness the Romans and their Germanic allies unite in that fight against the Gauls, Galen, Golem. There was a special rite of the solstice in ancient Rome. Some patrician women, namely, Romans, gathered in the temple of Vesta with some slaves who were driven outside the temple at the climax of the ceremony. These slaves were the darkness driven away from the Aryan race of the sun, the Olympic races cast against a dark underworld, and the entire social life of Rome, as well as the spiritual life, was based on this racial purity. Romans were in fact members of the 300 gens or clans descended from Romulus. And the Senate was the custodian of the Roman law, composed of 300 senators. One for each family, so that Romans were the only ones who could belong to the order of Praetorians. We are speaking of a society divided by racial purity, which was in the beginning a very clear racial distinction based simply on the color of hair. Blonde for the patricians and always a fair complexion for the Romans. We see how in Roman life, that is, in the unfolding of their destiny to rule and establish divine order in the world, spirit is not discerned from matter, for in the ritual symbols, central to Roman life, Victoria is the representation of all deeds in Rome. And it is the sun and Victoria, the Sieg with his cult in central Rome and for the Germans, Sieg Heil, that was understood to be at the heart of the Aryan folk in every physical and metaphysical context. This is reflected in their eternal symbol, the swastika. The symbol of soul. Invictus, a symbol marking the Aryan migration into all continents. The swastika was brought in with the Jus Saturnia Tellus by the Romans and all the other so-called Latin and Italic peoples of northern origin, which then marks the sacred, even earlier than the Roman fasces, of Etruscan origin. One could say that Rome is the victory of the swastika over the cult of the moon. If the first manifestation of Hyperboreans, or perhaps Neo-Post-Diluvians, in the Mediterranean was in Sparta, it is also certain that this was only the foreknowledge of Rome, the eternal center of primordial tradition. Sparta must be sacrificed for Rome to rise, for let us remember the 300 Spartans of Thermopylae were the mythical ancestors of the 300 clan leaders of the Romulia gens, since there is not only a physical genealogy but also a metaphysical one. Rome is nothing but Thule rising from the waters that had flooded over all, for it is a fire that must flame in victory over the waters. It is the light that will illuminate the centuries and will be reincarnated in the struggles of the Aryans. The Romans were the sons of Lucifer, the Viriath, the men against time, incarnate gods, angels, fallen to earth. And this is our eternal archetype. In it we see the rise of the Imperium and the Pontifex Maximus, the Führer, as even this is not, as many. Imagine, a system based on a step pyramid. No, the Roman community is a circle. And Augustus or Pope is but the primus inter pares. Let us see the Hitlerian view of empire, the Reich. It is the superiority and dignity of a bright glorious race stretching over lands and peoples in a deep desire to organize. And a Roman would say, it is God's will to restore the cosmic order through the deeds of a pontifex, an avatar. We should never lose sight of the profound meaning of all this. We are not speaking of political or ideological actions, but affirming the sanctity of the Roman Imperium, an immanent reality which justifies itself as a divine mandate. As the deeds of a race of lords, a race descended from Mars, the Romans. So that every action taken by this gens, in the creation of the Imperium, before falling beneath impure influences, has a value that is more than human. In this we can see the true heir of Rome is National Socialism and thereby reject any supposed opposition between Romanism and Germanism. Far from it, Hitler did not accept that dualism, perhaps carried out by some in the Third Reich and by most in Italian fascism. In fact, the Führer had a clear universal vision exceeding national concepts. His vision of man and society was entirely Roman, if we wish to use this term. This can be seen even in this: Rome's victories went as far as she was meant to reach, but then no further. Rome stopped where she had to stop, at the Rhine, for beyond were other gods who were to have their imperial regalia in Gothic kingdoms, in the heyday of the Ghibellines and the Knights of the Grail, to their resurrection in the Third Reich. And in this we see embodied the very principles of ancient Rome. Hitler was the bearer of the swastika in a Europe covered by the darkness of Asiatic Bolshevism, the true barbarians of the ignorant, worthless, dangerous rabble who laughed against everything noble and divine. Weimar Germany was very similar to Etruria, covered with cabaret performances, orgiastic sensualism, a life based on moral degeneration, the devil of the masses. Against them stood a Mannerbund, like the early Romans, necessary by destiny. And each sharing a national socialist movement which will become a rite of value. Just as in Roman history, where history merges with legend. As in ancient Rome. In the Third Reich the right was the basis of everything. It was always important to respect the time and mode of conduct, whether in private life, public rituals, or in the religion of the folk. The imperial eagle now seized the swastika, as if to signify the universal victory of the Aryan in all its various manifestations. Once again, the victory of the sun over darkness and the celebration of the solstices on the plains of Asia fighting against the Judaic East, the eternal enemy of Thule. The Bolshevik Hazars in the East and the Western Hazars who hid in the guise of commercial finance embodied the role of the Etruscans, the Carthaginians. Motivated by hate against the splendor of the Reich and its imperium of Lex Romana over the Slavic peoples who had lost the favor of their gods, which was the reason for their defeats first in the mortal blows against them in the 1940s and then later in their utter defeat of the 1990s. So destruction of the enemy is first and foremost a cosmic mission, a spiritual duty, as the way to the great and holy war against all evil. Now we receive the blessings of so great a triumph, for the Slavic peoples are at last fully able to become true Romans, true Nordics, to be welcomed by us with admiration and respect as fellow warrior farmer citizens of Arya. And it is this concept of order and dominion, first of all over the self, which is the way of tantric Hitlerism, the way of the sacred Roman, superbly incarnated in the order with its discipline of the element of Mars, inherited from those orders of chivalry, which are inevitably rooted in the praetorians of Augustus, since it is obvious the same spirit worked in both Constantine and in the contemporary Germanic warriors who, by being welcomed into all ranks of the Roman army with admiration and respect, began that great renewal of the Nordic origins of Rome and Europe we know as the Middle Ages. Marching with helmets shining and endless banners of solar symbols, each looking like another, feeling a sense of marbled discipline, with firmness of Olympic metal. And Apollo, celebrating a triumph under an arch, as the Führer extends his arm in the Roman salute, for those Berlin Olympics of 1936 were as old as Rome. In reality we see in Italy, as in the Roman Church, two forces were facing each other in the interwar period, the Gothic Roman represented by everything that was best, and the infernal, ultramontanist and Etruscan, represented by the anti-fascist Stalinist united front of decadence. But the real tragedy is that these dark forces have cleverly infiltrated into fascism itself, for everything that is born in Italy is always in danger of becoming Etruscan. We face a dark principle with its roots in the mists of time, perhaps in black magicians of Atlantis, and that even if defeated for the moment remains potent. Christianity must recall this dark Judaic power because Yahweh, the evil Satan, has taken his seat in Rome. The famous Acacio's operation, in which the Ur group adopted an old Etruscan fasces to evoke the forces of Roman tradition, was actually something very misleading, precisely because it was linked to something Etruscan, not to pure Aryan forces. Hence the inevitable betrayal of Italy on September 8, 1943 and the ambiguity that always marks the Italian, as if always missing something superior. What was lacking in fascism was the pure consciousness of the purely Roman, apart from any contamination. For Demeter and Femenia are ever ready to infiltrate, contaminate, acting through unconscious elements. Although the fasces was also a symbol of the Roman Empire, it is primarily an Etruscan symbol, inspired by Masonic lodges and especially by the Pharisee Catholic Church with its papal Asiatic despotism, the almighty anti-Roman power. The missing element, of fundamental importance, is the lack of a serious discussion of creating a new man. The motto "My honor is loyalty" or "Fides" is the feeling of ancestral presence and of their heirs who determine the meaning of their sacred land, and of his own destiny. Or it is pietas, the sense of belonging to a lineage of lords with contempt for what is not in the light of the sun, in favor of a spell of the real, of self-realization and the ability of Vir, to be transmuted into God through the worship of heroes who are gods in the ius sanguinis, the alchemical transmutation that is the esoteric meaning of Roma Amor, in everything we see with Roman Hitlerism, and through this we come to Arya, the eternal Hyperborea. 2,642 years after the founding of Rome, the morning star appears again, this time to illuminate the birth of another Romulus, to drive away the dark elements by bearing the eternal symbol of light, like a thunderbolt of Jupiter Optimus Maximus, who comes down to electrocute the subtelluric decadence. There is no expression on his face, neither joy nor sorrow, in aristocratic detachment with life and death equal before him. He is Augustus, he whom many see but few recognize. Today only in Arya does a pre-selected corps become aware of this, they who are the wayfarers of dawn, the sons of Romulus, the Gothic Romans, the Praetorians of the Black Sun.